Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Sure. I'm Liz.
I'm Louis.
We're Holy Child.
So let's see. We can fill in a whole bunch of stuff. College, friends, declined grad school at Cal Arts, dance class, riffing on Radiohead, playlists, right? There's a million bullet points there. I'm more interested in the between the lines thing. So what are some things, and there's a million ways we can handle this, whichever one doesn't baffle you is fine by me. What is something you never get asked about? That's a good one. What is something you've always wanted to tell somebody? That's your deepest, darkest secret. What do you want people to know about the music that they don't know? Or you can completely lie.
So I think something that we haven't been asked is probably, or I don't know if we've been asked it directly, is why we were drawn to each other, if you're going to go through the bullet points of our bio. And I think personally, Louis grew up in Piedmont is in the middle of Oakland, which Oakland is kind of notoriously a place of...
urban.
Yeah, definitely urban. But Piedmont's not. Piedmont's so nice. And it's super suburban. It's really nice. Going back to Louis' hometown is like, I never grew up in a place like that. So Louis and I kind of grew up in completely opposite places. So I grew up in a really broken family. My dad left my family when I was really little and went to Saudi Arabia, and I didn't really know him at all, and my mom was working the whole time. We barely had any money. Louis has amazing parents. Well, my parents are amazing too, but his parents are still together and they're in Piedmont still.
So it was interesting puzzle pieces.
Yeah, and for me, something that was really nice is that Louis was so privileged when he was growing up, but he's very aware of that, and we were both international affairs majors and are definitely concerned with the state of our culture socioeconomically, and I guess just like class disparity is something that's really interesting to us. So it was really interesting to me because I came from this completely different place, but he was able to really sympathize with me in a place, in a way that other people I felt hadn't, who did come from the same privilege.
So tell me about how you got to Glassnote.
I think we got to Glassnote from a combination of reasons. I think it was like a serendipitous stars aligned. I think they came to us. It was a first meeting. Really, Liam, his youngest son, I don't know if you know him, but Liam found us on Hype Machine? Or was it Diamonds? Or was it, that was a Happy With Me? But then Sean heard Diamonds. Remember Sean Glass emailed us? Yes. Sean Glass emailed us and was like, Diamonds on the Rebound's a great song. But it was Liam who initially, who sparked it with Daniel. And then Daniel wound up getting hit up by multiple different people. And by that point, he was like, all right, I need to check these guys out. And then we played CMJ Music Festival and kind of the rest is history.
Let's get the watch thing over with. Because that now what's going to happen for the next 22.6 interviews, and that's an exact number, including that 0.6, is, so, how does it feel to have us? I'm going to do it my way. You got yourself a killer sync. It's going to get to a zillion, quadrillion people. However, it's an older song.
About a year ago, we wrote part of it. Then in May, we wrote the rest of it in London. And then we recorded it in August. And then we released it in October. So, October? Actually, we released it in December. It's not Happy With Me. Happy With Me is like now like 2 years old. Yeah. So it's definitely, and it's the first song from our album to be out.
Right.
So that's really exciting to have a new song out and be picked up so quickly. And it's crazy. I mean, like, yeah, definitely if it was any other brand, I would probably be annoyed to talk about it.
Well, I was going to, and that's where I was, perfect segue, and that's what I was, I was going to get to part two, is being that the two of you are who you are, and that you're going to represent the subject matter and the things you're going to talk about. You're not going to make it easy for your team in terms of making you money where there's a lot of money to be made, are you?
Well, it's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, like, Apple is amazing. And Apple notoriously chooses great music. So it's kind of an honor to be chosen for an Apple Watch commercial. So that's kind of like its own separate entity. In terms of syncs and moving forward, it's really interesting to me that brands would be interested in us because we do talk about consumer culture in such an ironic way. And we do talk about how consumer culture and capitalism and the world of advertising and mass media has influenced our culture's perception of ourselves. And whatever. If a brand is like, yeah, we want to be saying this in a commercial, I'm like, that is hilarious. Use this song that is ironically speaking about you. That's great.
That's a unique way to come about it. I like that, right? In other words, you know what? Give us your money because it could be ironic.
That's how I feel about it.
Role of female and male in culture, balanced against two attractive people and a world where there are more boy-girl, male-female couples out there making popular music at this moment in time. I'm going to save you defining brat pop. I'm going to save you that definition. I understand it's about the rhythms, it's about the melodies, it's about making something your own. Do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, to us, brat pop is more rebellious pop music. So it's like, to me, it's one half rebellion, one half entertainment. I think we like to use familiar melodies and rhythms to bring people in, to hook people in, and then toss
some
curveballs.
And then pull them in to actually listen.
Yeah, and then toss some curveballs, whether it be some unsettling lyrics or some syncopated rhythm or some unexpected chord progressions. That to us is brat pop. Yes, we do have a tendency towards big beats and anthemic choruses, and that's our kind of brand of brat pop. But I feel like there's other artists out right now, and I'm sure others that could fall under this umbrella that we've created.
But a majority of it is let's party, right? Or I had a broken love affair or whatever, right?
Pop music out right now.
Well, and also the male female thing. We could rattle off the tons of them, but generally. This is the thing that defines you, right?
Yeah, I mean, we just come at things from such an intellectual standpoint or an academic standpoint, I guess. And I think that other people are definitely capable of that. But to me, I don't see that much.
Do you think, this is a tough question. So your audience out there, right, who's listening to this music, and it's going to be heavily between the commercial, it's going to make its way onto top 40. But when you're playing shows and you're playing to this audience, how do you feel comfortable about making sure they're not just listening to the Afro-Cuban drums and making sure that some messages are getting through? Do you think it's just happening because it's there and it kind of gets ingrained in their heads afterwards if they hear it enough?
Yeah, the live show is a different thing. That's a great question. We do different things. First of all, I have all the boys in our band. We have a 6-piece band right now. So it's me and Louie. Louie's brother's on drums. We have another multi-instrumentalist and then 2 backup singers. So the 2 backup singers are males. I already think that that's challenging expectations. All of the guys right now are wearing sports gear. I think it's really interesting, the idea of the ideal male. Because it's really amazing that this idea of feminism is making its way into pop culture right now, and I'm really inspired by that. And I almost think we need to come up with a new word for it, because it is kind of an exclusive term by nature, because I feel like this is a problem that affects the entire culture. So I really like putting the guys in sports gear, because it's kind of like the ideal male, sporty and fun. But I've been bedazzling their sports clothes, so they have jewels all over them. And I think that's really interesting. And we'll put Louis. Yeah, Louis's been wearing chokers lately, this one that I'm wearing right now. It's kind of like a dominatrix choker with a little puff on it. So Louis will wear that. And we try to subtly put in messages, because the live show is a party. And it's kind of like a celebration of everything we're doing. And I think that the goal is to draw people in with that.
And then get them to the record, and then they can listen and pay attention.
And they can hear it. And I feel like once they're hearing the record, they'll be like, oh, that makes sense that they were doing that at the live show. You know, we have other live shows where we'll put trophies all over the stage. And it's like, just like a really fun thing. Like, look, we're winning. we're like, I think that our culture speaks in superlatives a lot, and that's a really interesting thing to me. And, the concept of winning, good, bad, it's just like, who gives a f-? That's like, you made that up. That's made up by our culture. And so we like turning that on its head.
When it's our own headlining show, another thing we'll do is like our intro, our walk-on music will project this, these visuals that Liz put together. What can you talk about that?
Right, when we walk on stage, this song that we wrote for our album, but it's not included on it, we'll play. And there are some visuals of like this. Have you seen the movie Dr. Sex? Uh-huh. Yeah, so it's visuals from Dr. Sex mixed with like old porn, essentially, that plays to like choppy editing with, and it just says Holy Child on it. So it's like, hey, this is about what you're about to see. It's like really pretty colors and interesting things, but like,
naked women.
Yeah, it's like just weird. And then the show starts, and all the guys walk out, and the male backup singers walk out. And then even for shows when we can do this, we'll have backup dancers who are doing like kind of absurdist movements, like hip thrusts in really sarcastic way. I'm super into Fellini and absurdism. So that's kind of just like everywhere.
Do you think your audience will appreciate how educated you are and that you really actually know your stuff? Is it important to you that they understand that you're not just coming out there and wearing cool clothing and have cool beats and all of that? To me,
no. Yeah, but, and thanks for the great questions. And I think it's as important that people connect with us on our message as they do with the music, with the beats, with the melodies.
I do too. That's why I'm asking.
Yeah, it's, and I mean, going back to one of your earlier questions in terms of questions that I hope that people would ask us in interviews, and we rarely get asked, is why we do this. Why do we do art? Why do we do Holy
Child? This is more, I mean, I know you're an artist, but I see this as the strangest master's thesis ever. Or an art project. You know, I mean, seriously, because it's a continuum of what you've done before you've done this.
Precisely.
Right?
And so
I don't know if people get that.
Yeah, but I mean, at some point, I mean, to answer this question I just posed to myself, I mean, our ultimate goal for Holy Child is to make a lot of money and to give it all away to public education. So if we could achieve that, it would make me, I could die happy. My education in Piedmont was amazing, but then I had friends in Oakland or in Berkeley. And
yeah, I mean, before Holy Child, we were both teaching. I was teaching music and Liz was teaching dance. And I just think, I mean, I know it sounds cliche to do it for the kids, but seriously, I feel like education for everybody, kids, adults, teenagers, is just make or break for our culture.
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're trying to do now. It's like educating people in a different way. It's not like, I don't think you learn everything from school. You don't learn everything from sitting in a classroom. And so like, this is kind of like, you know, posing questions. It's like kind of Plato kind of educated his students in that way, like, but just by simply, and Socrates, I think, did the same thing, just by simply posing questions, like, and continuing to pose questions. And so we're kind of doing that in an ironic way too. Like, I'm just your Playboy girl, and you're singing along to it, and it's like, oh, wait a second, what am I saying right now? Oh, why is she talking about this? And just kind of like going about it in an ironic way and trying to change our culture from the inside out that way.
Okay, from serious to silly, I'm going to do it in the full announcer voice. L.A. versus Brooklyn, Silver Lake versus Williamsburg.
Oh, wow. So I've lived in both now.
Yeah.
L.A., I'm definitely digging L.A. right now. I really miss New York. There seems to be kind of an exodus from New York to L.A. right now. Like, it's really inspiring.
Yeah, but I think at some point in the next year or two, we want to try out Mexico City, actually.
Ooh, boy, you are radicals. Because there's what is that, 14 million people?
Yes, the biggest city in the world, I'm pretty sure.
These are scary places. Yeah.
Definitely, but I feel like the art coming out of Mexico City right now is really inspiring, and I want to be around that. Like, L.A. is cool. There's a bunch of really great art coming out of it. We're friends with a bunch of amazing artists in L.A. I love that, and I feel like I get inspired by being in a new place, and I just feel like it would be so amazing to be in Mexico City.
The intensity
and also...
The art
is so inspiring. I mean, Birdman was amazing.
Playing at MoMA, There's a special, when you talk about being able to make an environment, that must have been amazing.
That was incredible. That was incredible because it wasn't just Holy Child playing at MoMA. It was, they curated the night. They had an artist, Robert Heineken, who is an ex-Playboy photographer, who his work is like, is this guy being sarcastic or is he trying to photograph sexy girls? Is he fucking us? I can't tell. So they took Robert Heineken. They opened his exhibit. And then they screened the Mindspeak trilogy, three videos that I directed that made up a short film. And then we played. So it was a night that was really curated for us. It was so amazing. I mean, that happened about a year ago. Even looking back at the past year, it's like, what is one of the most incredible things that has happened to you? It's definitely playing at the moment. That was insane.
And when does the full record come out?
June 2nd.
Okay, good. That gives me timing. Now I know when. So the album's out June 2nd. What I've done is I've invented a thing called a musical sandwich. And what it is two of your songs is the bread and songs by others in between.